Welcome to Creative Conversations. I'm Roger Humphrey. In this episode, I'm pleased to welcome pianist Yekuan Sunwoo. Join us as we talk about his winning the 2017 Van Cliburn competition and how that's changed his life. He was actually the first Korean to do so. His love of the music of Franz Schubert, his touring schedule, and so much more. Before we begin, please hit the like, follow, and subscribe buttons and any other button you see down there. Also, leave a comment. You know, I'm still trying to convince the algorithm gremlins that I actually know people. Thanks. And we are welcoming to the program pianist Yekuan Sunwoo. Did I say that right?
Yes, that's actually correct. Actually, in Korean, it's pronounced as Yekuan Sunwoo.
Okay.
I lived in the U.S. for quite some years. And it's spelled with a K, so people call me Yekuan, but feel free to do Yekuan or Yekuan.
Okay.
Doesn't matter.
That's very forgiving. I appreciate that. That's very gracious. I could mess up Bob Smith. Names are so important, and I just really, it really bothers me when I mess somebody's up, but anyway, thank you so much for coming on the program. I really, really appreciate this. I have been listening to you for the last few days, listening to you play, and I just have fallen in love with the way you play. You play so beautifully.
Thank you so much.
So now you've had a professional career for what, almost 20 years now, yes?
Something like that. So I started playing the piano when I was 8 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I'm 36, I think. So it's been about 28 years that I play the piano. And then I first went to the U.S. in 2005. I went to Curtis Music and Juilliard. And then I moved to Germany in 2016. I went to school there also. I live in Berlin now.
Oops, you totally broke up. You totally broke up. Can you say you live in Berlin now?
Yes. So I live in Berlin, but since I won the competition in 2017, Van Cliburn competition, I started having more career as a concert pianist. You could say since then I played even more concerts.
How many concerts a year do you do?
I don't count them now, but
that's a busy person.
Yeah, it's difficult enough that I memorize all the notes that I have to play, and I get so behind with all the emails and stuff. When I first won the competition, you know, in the beginning year, they have the concert schedule already booked before knowing the winner.
Okay.
So for that year, I remember because they had it in Excel file, I think almost over 100 concerts I did for a couple of years, and then, you know, which was fine, and I was really happy, and it was not difficult traveling around and, you know, getting used to the time differences. But now I think if I keep doing that, I think that will ruin my whole body, and it's not healthy. But, you know, I think maybe 50 to 60 concerts per year, about that I do.
That's a lot of concerts. I don't think people realize just how much work goes into that. And you do a lot of concerti. And so I'm assuming you're not doing the same concerto all season long. So that's a lot of notes to memorize there as well.
Yes, very. And also the recital program, I do a couple different programs per year. But it's because we're living in a, you know, time where we can travel quite somewhat easily, and, you know, therefore we are expected that we carry this number of works that we can do easily, and fortunately I have quite a bit of repertoire ranging different, diversity and periods. So it's I'm fortunate to have that repertoire. And when I was younger, I loved learning new pieces. So I think one time when my mom was worried that I always explore different new music, and instead of focusing on just one piece that I'm given to practice.
Yes.
But I think it turned out to be a better solution. And also I improved my sight reading skills by learning a lot of new repertoire.
I know when years ago when I was first learning, I would that was what I did when it was raining outside and it was just there wasn't anything else to do and I was in a mood, and I would go grab some music that I'd never played before and just start sight reading through pieces and use it as a time of discovery, which I've cherished those moments of my whole life. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's incredible. When you're learning new stuff also, you feel, of course, if you feel fatigue because you use a lot
of course.
You know, thought process, and when you're trying to observe something new, but once when you do that, you feel like you're alive, and also, you know, when you go through the process of, you know, getting the music into your body system, and making it on your own experience and emotion, and to bring that out through your music, it's incredible feeling. It's almost impossible to just describe experience.
I noticed in listening to the Sonata 18 by Schubert, I was listening to the first movement of that, and just the way that you played that, there is a tendency, I think, for a lot of players, particularly students, but a lot of players in general, to overplay 19th century music, and you had such an intimate relationship with that. It was absolutely charming. I didn't want to stop listening to it. I had other things I had to do, and I just kind of sit here and.
That's very kind of you. You know, Schubert is actually one of my very, very dear and favorite composers, and that sonata particularly, you know, it's an unreal, also almost, it's heavenly music, and it just takes you to somewhere else. And right from the beginning of the first note until the very last, the piece, the whole work is about close to, I think, 40 minutes or so, 35 or something like that, very long.
Right.
It's just such an experience. It's even as a performer and as a listener, it's quite divine.
Perfect word.
I really appreciate that you listen.
So yeah, it really is divine. And but there was watching you play that, watching on YouTube for anybody who wants to check it out, watching you play that, there was an obvious emotional connection between you. I've always said when you watch a performer play a piece written by somebody else, that's like this it's like a marriage. There's this third personality that emerges from that, and it was so clear in that this connection that you had with the music. It was lovely. It was really, really very charming to watch and listen to. I mean, it's beautiful music to begin with, but again, like I say, it's the chord structures are such that it's easy to pound. and you showed such loving restraint. It was very tender. I really loved it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
So, and La Valse was part of the Cliburn thing, right?
Yes, it's a lot of people talk about it, and you know, it's a popular work, of course. And
of course,
I love to play, but I you know, but I think it's right. It's very from the beginning to the end. It's not only I'm terrible with the words. I could play a little bit better than describing and talking. But you know, it's middle of nowhere. You feel like there's a smoke in the beginning, and then the waltz rhythm from far back you hear, which keeps going until the very last beat, and it's Ravel uses such texture and different layers of colors and harmonies that just, you know, makes you want to, you know, dance also, but at the same time it's just explosion is, you know, it's like fireworks everywhere.
Well, I'm a big fan of Ravel and have been forever.
Me too.
And but La Valse is kind of interesting because that was originally an orchestral piece, right?
Yes.
And then he did three piano transcriptions, I believe.
Yes, there's the piano forehands and also I think one piano forehands also.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's one piano forehand plus two pianos and then the solo piano. And then I guess fairly famously some years or many years ago, Glenn Gould did his own transcription. So I was going to ask you, which transcription? Did you use Ravel's transcription, or was there another transcription that you used?
I think so. Some people do it differently. Some people try, you know, they find something new in the orchestra version and they try to apply into the piano from what they hear, or, you know, with the notes written. For me, I do exactly what he had written in the score, but only I think the later glissando I do with an octave, whereas I think it's probably just one single note octave.
Oh, okay.
To create a little more like a sweeping wave motion, I added an octave glissando. So I do that, and I think at the very end also there's this chord progression that goes really fast. I think some people, because it's technically very challenging, they make it simple with the thirds, or, you know, leave out some notes because it's not really important to play everything. But when I first played that piece, I think I was like, maybe 17 or something.
Oh my, very young.
And I was lazy to, you know, figure out what to leave out and stuff. So I played everything, which was really, you know, difficult. But yeah, other than that, I didn't add anything.
I think that people who don't traditionally listen to classical music believe that if it's on the page, we have to play it, and they don't realize just what we do to make it work, and the fact that it's common, you know, to leave something out, or even maybe something sometimes put something in, you know, in your case, putting in the octaves. So I don't think people understand that. So at the very least, hopefully anybody who's watching this or listening to this will understand it. We do that. So I was also going to ask you about the Rachmaninoff, because Rachmaninoff was a, as was Beethoven, a wonderful concert pianist.
Right.
And so do you find that bleeds over into the composition? Do they compose differently, not only stylistically because it's Rachmaninoff and not Ravel? That part I get, but I mean, technically, do you find things technically more challenging or less challenging or more pianistic or things like that?
Right. I think for Rachmaninoff, he was an incredible pianist. He was capable of
big hands.
Yes. Yes. I wish I also had a little bit. And but with him, you know, everything is written very pianistically. Of course, it's very challenging and very virtuosic, and it requires such technique. And I think some people injure their hands by playing some of his work, like the famous Rachmaninoff Third Concerto, which was also, I think, in the movie Shine. It was featured as devilish work, but this Rachmaninoff Moments Musica also, it's six individual. It could be also six individual pieces on its own.
Wow.
And each has different type of techniques. But when you also first look at the score, it kind of makes you want to almost like you want to kill yourself because there's so many notes, and it's just to look at the score, it's confusing to your eyes. But once you kind of, you know, figure out the patterns and the notes, it kind of falls into your hands. Whereas I would say, I think Schubert music, I think sometimes, most of the time, his music is somewhat more, it feels distant, and there's not, you know, that many notes written. But technically, I find Schubert even more challenging.
Well, what was the great quote about Mozart? Somebody once made the comment that was, his music was so simple a child could play it, but at the same time an adult couldn't. And I've often thought it was kind of cute, but yeah, I think that's kind of tricky. So, as you have the option of listening to, which we have now, which we didn't have many years ago, listen to recordings that were made a long time ago. And I won't ask about any contemporary players today, but are there any historic players that you listen to for inspiration?
Yes.
But yes.
Very many. I, you know, of course I have wonderful teachers that I worked with. So I also listen to some of my mentors playing also, or Richard Good, Seymour Lipkin, and also my professor in Germany, Bernd Gutzke. His teacher was Michelangeli, Arthur Michelangeli, and he's also one of my favorite artists, musician to listen to. And so Radulupu, Fred Couto, many others. The list goes.
Well, yes, I totally get that. I was struck many years ago watching Vladimir Horowitz's video of him in Moscow, and he's playing Scarlatti.
Oh, and, it's incredible, no?
Oh, it's amazing, right? Because it's he just brings everything in, becomes so intimate, you know. And it's you almost feel like you're peeking through a window to watch him. I mean, it's terrific, and of course, and many others as well. So I have my own favorites, of course, but I was wondering about yours. So, you won the Cliburn in 2017. You were the first Korean to do so.
Yes.
That must have been kind of exciting.
Yeah, very. Almost like a life-changing experience. And also, so I prepared, I think, about 3 to 4 hours of music, and I think I played six times to get through.
And each time your heart is pounding, right?
Oh my God, yeah, but yeah. and the scariest part is of course, the announcement.
Oh, sure.
Each round, and I think each time you feel like your life is reduced to shorter amount of time. It's like, yeah, but I can't complain. It's like I want the gold. So.
Oh, yeah. So there's people. I don't think in a traditional recital or concert, those few minutes prior to going on stage is always nerve-wracking. That's where the nerves really hit. And then once you're out on stage and you play those first couple of notes, you settle in and everything is okay. And Van Cliburn, there's a wonderful, I heard a story years ago that he would get so nervous prior to a concert that he would order the limo driver to drive around the block until about 5 minutes before he had to go on stage, and he'd come running so he didn't have time to get worried. That's a great story, and I don't think anybody who's ever if you've never been on stage, you don't get it, you know. And if you've ever been on stage once, you totally understand. But people think that you get over that, and I don't think you ever get over it. You get used to it. It becomes a part of the process, but you don't get over it.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to get over it. As you said, you could get used to it, and you kind of use that kind of nervous feeling into better, you know, concentration and focus. But when you have to play something new for the very first time, it's always even more nerve-wracking. And of course, pianists, we often play everything by memory, and it becomes like a custom. So therefore, I think that also puts a little more anxiety at times. But at the same time, when you play something by memory, I think it you can produce something even more special. And for us, we always play by ourselves, you know, just one piano, one pianist on the stage. So it really feels like you're completely in a different world at that particular time. So I think what I try to do is, you know, just try not to think about anything else, but just about the music and just try to sing everything that goes.
So you do solo recitals, and you do orchestral works, big concerti and such, but you also do chamber music.
Yeah, a lot of chamber music if I have the opportunities.
Is that something that you really like to do?
Yes. So when I first went to Curtis, when I was like 15, I you know, Curtis, I think they had the whole total students, it's about 160, I think. And, you know, people, the school almost requires people to play chamber music, you know. So I played a lot of repertoire, the trios, quartets, you know, quartets and quintets, or, you know, sonatas with other violinists or cellists, different instruments.
Sure.
And also that helped me understand each composer even more deeply, whereas when you play just the piano and when you listen to just the piano music, your perspective, it doesn't really grow. And you know, like Schubert music, he wrote a lot of piano music, but also, you know, he's more leader composer. And so, of course, Beethoven, Brahms, you have to listen to other symphonies or other works in order to understand their musical style. And but I think that's what I was trying to do. And also by doing chamber music, I could express better somehow emotionally, to bring out the emotion through the playing the piano. So whenever I have the opportunities, I try to do that, and it kind of gives a fresh ideas, and you know, you use your ears more attentively, and I think that helps. Also,
well,
when you
there's this conversation with the other musicians as the different instruments are working together. I think that my experience with chamber music, I'm a guitar guy. My experience has been that the technical demands, typically, not always, but typically the technical demands are far less than they are for the solo works. But I think the artistic demands are different and present a whole new group of challenges. And I love it. I absolutely love it. And I love that camaraderie that you have as well. I think that's... it's the closest thing to a rock band that we have. Yeah, we get to play like that. But I'm an absolute avid fan of chamber music in all forms, not just for myself, but to listen to other instruments, you know, string quartets, piano trios. It's on and on and on and on. And I think it's probably my all-time favorite form. I mean, I like music in general, of course, but there's a special spot in my heart for chamber music. So I really like it. So you've done well. The Van Cliburn competition recorded your performance, I believe, and put that out as a recording. Is that correct?
Yes, I think live rounds from the competition,
right.
Live pieces.
And then, but you've done two recordings of your own, two CDs of your own.
The studio, yes. Yeah, I did a Mozart album and Rachmaninoff.
And nice choices. Now, where did you record these?
So the Mozart, it was planned before COVID times. Yeah. It almost feels like, you know, a long time ago.
Oh, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah. It was strange. Well, still strange world now, but anyway, so it was supposed to be before, but, you know, as COVID hit, you know, there were cancellations everywhere, and it was not possible to record. So we had to find some different venue, but I record in Germany, Neumarkt, and I think it was 2020. Yeah, that I recorded. It's two albums, and I think we had about 5 days to record the whole pieces, which I thought was long enough time. But then it was surprising because the first day I could only get to one movie.
You just broke up again. Can you repeat that, please?
Yes, I'm sorry. So I recorded the CD just around during the COVID time. And in Germany, we had about 5 days to record the whole programs, two discs. And I was actually struggling because the first day I could only record one movement and a half. But from the second day, you know, it kind of went somewhat easily, and we could finish all the recording process. And the Rachmaninoff album I did 2 years ago, I think, 2025 now, two years ago. And also that album, you know, even when I was sick, I never turned down any engagement, there was nothing that I canceled because I was sick. But at that time, I was going through high fever and also
sore throat, and laryngitis.
Yeah, and also the sinus.
Oh.
Sinus was at the same time, so it was really, really terrible. Every, you know, in between half an hour or every half an hour or something, I had to go back to the bathroom to blow out and appointment, go back and we only had to, I think, 2 days to record.
Oh man.
And the next day I had to fly to New York to rehearse I was playing Schubert Trout Quintet and other works. But anyway, it turned out to be quite good recording that I'm happy with.
Do you use a producer, somebody that you know, or does the label provide a producer, or how does that work for you?
So there's this Korean tone meister, Jin Choi. I worked with him quite a few times. And he does a lot of recordings with different labels, but I trust I for that Rachmaninoff album, he was there during the recording sessions, and I know how I had experiences with him, you know, previous times, and I musically I trusted him, so I think therefore I could finish the process, you know, knowing that it will go in the right kind of direction, and he knows what type of sound that I listen to and what kind of emotion that I want to carry out. So when I, you know, to save the time, because we had such a limited amount of time,
Sure.
like I was physically, mentally not in a, you know, comfortable situation. When he said, it's good, I fully trusted that it is, and I could let some things go. But of course, if I was not happy, then I would do some parts again or something like that. But because I knew also, I trusted him, and I respected his musicality and also his concepts.
Just
So
good ears. Just
yeah, very good ear.
I've done quite a bit of recording over the years, and I don't think number one, I've tried to self-produce, and it's always a disaster. I get lazy. Well, that's pretty good, you know. And and I've worked with other producers that, and I don't think other people understand this that have never done this. You need to have a producer that you can trust.
Right.
That is, oh my goodness, that is so important. And I've worked with some that I didn't, and I didn't trust them for very good reason. But I have a friend of mine who's produced, been my producer for the last 20, 25 years now, although I haven't recorded in a long time. And he will tell me when it's not good enough. Come on, you can do that. I've heard you play that better, you know. And he makes and we're able to do some things. And I've always felt like we've got a pretty good recording every time. That's the other thing with a recording, of course, it's a product. If you go out and you play Schubert on Monday, and then you play Schubert again on Thursday, okay, you could have a bad Monday and recover on Thursday, right?
Right.
But if it's a recording, if it's bad, it's bad forever.
I know.
So you want to make sure it's right the first time, and you work at it and craft it. So working with a producer, I think, is really important, and particularly as you indicated, somebody that you trust. So now you do most of the stuff we're talking about, Schubert and Rachmaninoff and such. Do you do any contemporary music, or do you commission works?
I haven't been able to do it so much, but recently in March, just a couple months ago, I was in Dongyang Music Festival in Korea. It's run by the artistic director Eunsook Ching, who's incredible, amazing person and musician and composer. But I was doing a lot of, you know, chamber music, and also this particular season, they featured Hans Abrahamsen. I think he's from Denmark,
Okay.
and his music. I played left hand concerto with the orchestra, and also the piano trio with violin, horn, and piano. I don't think he fully studied with Ligeti, but he had worked with Ligeti also. And there are rhythmically, you know, some parts that resemble, and then that one can say kind of reminds of Ligeti. But his music I found it's very pure and very sincere. Which is difficult to find at times with the contemporary composers,
Yes.
living composers, and very specific. And also, he was present in Korea, and I could, you know, have a talk with him and ask questions, and he was giving feedback regarding some parts, and it was very special. I think if I could pair with other compositions, I would try to do more of his music into the recital programs. And also have a colleague of mine from Curtis, Chris Rogers, and I played some of his music with the violinist Benjamin Bachmann, who is an amazing violinist. He also teaches occurred now. But there's also so many other incredible musicians. Like I would love to get more into it, but I think oftentimes they require a little more time because of the, you know, difficulty learning the notes.
Right.
At the beginning, this process, and rhythmically it's very intricate to figure things out. But I think, you know, if like I would love to do more of that.
Wow, it's as busy as you are, that would be hard to find the time to practice, you know, let alone rehearse. That's all of that's very difficult. So, well, sir, believe it or not, we are about out of time. And so I am going to say thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me and tell us all about this stuff. I really appreciate that. Best fortune to you, sir, and I hope you come back on the show soon.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and very nice talking to you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. I'd like to thank Yekwan Sunwu for taking the time to talk with me. And I want to thank you, too, for taking the time to join us. It's appreciated. Hey, before you go, I'd like to remind you that fundamentally, I am a guitar teacher. So if you are or would like to be a guitarist, please visit www.rogerhumphrey.com and check it out. There are free video tips, free PDFs that you can download. Those are in the resources section, and much more. You don't have to subscribe, but if you do, I promise I won't spam you. Thanks again for hanging out with me, and I hope you'll check out even more episodes of Creative Conversations with Roger Humphrey.